Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm trying to figure out how you compress the history of wine to 100 bottles. The research must have been amazing.
I think it was years of hanging around in low dives and with bad people and feeling very sick the next morning and wondering where my head had been left. But I could have done it, the history of wine, in 200 bottles. Because you know what it is. People say, editor says, hey, do 100. And you say, but I've got 200 stories I want to tell. They say, that's okay, do 100. So I condensed it down. But what I basically tried to tell was 100 stories which I wanted to tell. And some of them are like really serious stuff about, hey, this is actually where wine was first invented and this is how they did it. But you turn the page and then you see, well, actually, these are the legends and these are the myths about wine, because actually they're a bit more interesting than the facts. You know, there's stuff in there about the oldest bottle of wine in the world that is still around today. There's one, you know, there's a bottle in Germany which was of wine which was made in 1540.
Oh.
Now, that's God knows how many, you know, 470 years old, that kind of thing. There are stories about how glass was invented, how the first wine bottles were invented, where cork comes from, you know, what bag-in-box and box wines, all that kind of technical stuff. There's also stuff about Louis Pasteur and how he stopped wines turning to vinegar, and that kind of stuff. But then there's just tales about prohibition. There's tales about what the Nazis did in the Second World War. There's tales about in the First World War when the champagne guys, the women and the children used to have to go out and pick the grapes because the front line between Germany and France ran between the best vineyard, right through the best vineyards in Champagne. They call them the blood vintages, and they still have a few bottles in Champagne. And you know, they say every single bottle of this wine is running with French blood, and they mean it. And stuff about, you know, Gallows Hardy Burgundy, because I think that's a very important wine, and things like White Zinfandel. Where the hell did that come from? And then stuff like the most northerly vineyard in the world, and the most southerly vineyard, and the highest vineyard, and the one in the furthest into the desert. Stuff that I just think would be interesting. You know, the big fraudsters. There's a massive fraudster just been jailed in the States in the last year, so I thought I'll write a chapter on him too, and saying it's unbelievable. Him and his mother just making all these 60, 70, 80, 100, 120-year-old bottles in their kitchen, and they did it so well that they're sold through all the great auction houses for tens of thousands of dollars, and they're worth about, you know, $5.50 at the best. Those stories, it's about stories.
Well, that's the best part about the book. You don't have to know a lot about wine to appreciate what is in the book, but I think you'll be more knowledgeable about it when you do read it.
I hope so, because, I mean, I've given lots of facts and stuff, you know, because I like facts. But I like to, when I start spewing out facts, I like to embroider them a bit. As my mum, I'm Irish, so my mum said, you know, she said, never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Oh, absolutely not.
I mean, that's a very... Yeah, that's a good way to look at stuff. So there's lots of facts there, but when I felt, God, this is getting a little bit boring, either I said to my editor, sorry, I'm just not going to write that story, or I thought I need to find something else. And what you often do is you're doing a bit of wine stuff. Think, this is getting a bit boring. So you then go into other histories. You go into social history. You go into cultural history. You go into the history of people's behavior. And then you think, oh, my God, I didn't know they did that. Put that in the story, and suddenly the story's worth reading. Because, as you said, you don't have to know much about wine to enjoy the book. But if you do know a lot about wine and want to know more, I hope there's loads of stuff in the book that you didn't know. But ideally, as I said, I want people to think there's 100 stories in here, and I'm going to enjoy most of them.
Well, I love the book personally. You just mentioned that big wine fraud that was perpetrated. Do you think people are so in love with the fact that they can pay enormous amounts of money for a bottle of wine that they kind of overlook the lesser vintages and a less expensive bottle of wine that they might have enjoyed more?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of these guys who paid tens of thousands of dollars of wine that are clearly fraudulent, they don't want to admit they've got those wines because they've got their rich friends coming around and they want to say, look at this $10,000, $20,000 bottle of wine I've got. And all of them will sit there around the table saying, this is pretty nice. Wow. So you're rich enough to buy a $20,000 bottle of wine. Hey, that's fantastic. They're not going to suddenly have the host saying, excuse me, I know it's a fraud. It's only worth $10, but I got duped by $19,990. So I'm an idiot. It's not going to happen. So these bottles of wine are going to be around for a bit. Hey, I'm not going to be drinking them because I don't drink that kind of stuff.
No.
And I hope you don't drink it either, but there's going to be stuff swanning around. That story's going to run around. I just thought it's the last chapter in the book because I do it vaguely chronologically, starting at about 6,000 BC and ending in 2014. You know, if I do a new edition next year, there'll be something from 2015 in it.
You mentioned the oldest bottle of wine in the world. How long does a bottle of wine actually last before it's really not terribly drinkable? Or does it?
I mean, some of them will really. Yeah, I've had stuff. I had a bottle of wine from a Madeira. Now, it could well have come from the south. It might well have come from somewhere like Savannah or Charleston or one of those places because they were the center of all Madeira drinking 150, 200 years ago. But this was a 1797 wine. Again, it wasn't my own wine, but I had this bottle of 1797 and I shared it with other guys. And it was astonishing. It was incredibly fierce and penetrating, and it almost hurt your mouth. It was so sort of aggressive. And yet somehow you just thought, damn. Napoleon was hanging out when this stuff was made. You know, the French Revolution was in full swing. And the sheer thrill of having a wine that old is not the flavor. It's the history, but wines. Champagne's a good example. People say you've got to drink champagne as soon as you buy it. Good champagne, good non-vintage champagne. Stick it. If you've got a cellar, if you've got an air-conditioned cellar, it'll be better in 10 years' time. Cabernet Sauvignon will always age. You know, you've got a young Cabernet Sauvignon, shove it in the cellar. It'll always get better.
Oh, I like things that get better with age. I'm counting on that for myself. What are the best wines out there for the price?
The kind of stuff that you need to look at. In generally, try and avoid the smartest areas. I mean, Bordeaux is obviously a smart area. There's cheap Bordeaux, but it's not very good. There's middle price Bordeaux, which can be good to excellent, and then there's ridiculously expensive Bordeaux, which leave that to the people who want to pay that kind of silly money. Mm-hmm. Same in something like Napa Valley. In Napa Valley, if you go for the top Cabernet Sauvignons in Napa Valley, you're paying well over $100 before you even start. But actually, if you go for the less popular grape varieties and the less popular labels, you can get for $30, $40. You can get lovely stuff from the Napa Valley. If you go to, I was just going to say, you don't have a lot of wineries in Florida, but you have got about 18, 20 wineries there.
Yes, we do.
Wonderful wine, it's called from the Muscadine grapes. There's a just north of Florida, actually, but Florida may have some, the Scuppernong grape. Do you have some of that Scuppernong grape?
I believe we do.
And you used to make all the way, going up to Prohibition, and I talk about Prohibition in the book, by the way, as well, because you have to. Because, when Prohibition started, from when it started to when it finished, there were 50% more wine being made when Prohibition finished than when it started. it was just all nonsense. But there are other things. If you choose a grape like Riesling, for instance, if you go into your wine store and say, hey, if you like dry wine, well, Washington State makes pretty dry Riesling. Alsace in France makes pretty dry Riesling. New York State makes lovely dry Riesling.
Oh, yeah.
Not very popular. So it's this whole thing. Try and get quality which isn't very popular. South Africa at the moment, the rand is incredibly cheap.
Oh yeah.
So South African wines are cheap, and if you get a white grape called the Chenin Blanc, you get Chenin Blanc from California as well. But if you get Chenin Blanc from South Africa, it's a really, really nice drink. From Argentina. Argentina's economy is in absolute chaos. And consequently, they scrabble to get hard currency from the States, and you get loads of really, really good, juicy, delightfully gluggable red Malbec from Argentina for not a lot of money.
That sounds good to me. We only have a couple of minutes left. Just two questions for you. The best wine you've ever had and the best toast you've ever made. That we can put on the air.
Which I don't know, because it's funny, you know. You say the best wine, and you think all these fabled wines, 100 years old. But I go back to places and people, and if I had to think, one of the most memorable wines I ever had was when I'd just fallen in love with a beautiful girl, and we'd gone down to Florence, and we decided to walk to Siena. I mean, we never made it. But we walked out of Florence, and we walked into the first little village there. We were absolutely parched, and we stopped in this shop and said, can we have some wine, please? And the guy said, where's your bottle? I said, what do you mean, where's our bottle? He said, you've got to bring a bottle to have some wine. I said, we didn't know that. So he got us a dusty liter bottle, and he went in the back of the shop and squirted this sort of frothing, pink, sour, sweet kind of stuff. And it was my first glass of real Chianti. And then we got some salami and some cheese and some tomatoes, walked out of the village, and we lay in the meadows by the side of the hillside and drank this liter of sour, sharp Chianti and ate our cheese and our tomatoes in the Tuscan sun. And people said, what was it called? I said, I've no idea. It didn't matter. Memories.
Those are beautiful memories. Well, do you have a toast to close us out with today?
I don't normally do toast, but because I'm Irish, I will just have, I'll give you a beautiful, sweet Sláinte.
Oh, please.
Sláinte's the Irish for everything, good wishes, good health. And the lovely thing about Sláinte is it sounds slightly better when you've had a couple of drinks than when you're sober.